Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. And I've had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with rage, with depression, and with panic attacks. So we're starting. We just finished up a series. Of course, we missed last week due to Christmas together with extended family when it's not always, when it's kind of clumsy sometimes and was not so easy. And we talked about it for lots of reasons. When you got a booger in the mix, when you got an empty spot at the table because somebody passed away, when you have high expectations that always get dashed. You know, we just talked about several things like that. Well, we're still in the wintertime. You know, we've gotten through the Christmas. Some of us have had great Christmas times. We had a super time with our family, so much fun. But some of us haven't. If we had true confessions tonight, some of us would get, you know, up here and say, no, it didn't go so well with my family. It was still as dysfunctional as it's always been. But we're only partway through winter. Now comes New Year's. And the thing with New Year's is to make some sort of resolution, you know, for the next year, which I really like what you said. Yeah, like for sure. So I could have just sat down and let you just hear what Matt said. But I kind of want to piggyback off what we didn't. I literally went up to him 5 seconds ago and said, could you host tonight? So I blindsided him. But what you said was just perfect. So we want to talk about resolutions tonight. But understand that 2 weeks into January, they're all obsolete, right? Maybe 1 week into January, it's obsolete. It's like, what was that I said? I forget what I said. But you still have to deal with the lack of vitamin D, shorter days, long nights, cabin fever. You know, just you have to deal with all this, and a lot of people suffer with winter depression. I remember the first time it ever hit me. I think a junior high, and I had no clue what it was. I just knew I woke up in the morning and I didn't want to get out of bed, and I didn't want to live. I didn't want to do anything. Didn't want to go anywhere, and I didn't know what it was. And then the next year it happened, and the next year. Hello. You know, after 5 or 6 years, like, oh, I see a pattern here. And so I've dealt with it ever since. And so it's kind of like I see it coming, and it's not as devastating, and it's not as bad as it was. But depression is a real thing that a lot of us have had to deal with and are dealing with right now. And so a lot of it really gets exaggerated in wintertime. So we're going to talk about that for the next few weeks. I'm going to bring another lesson the next week. Then the next week, Robbie is having surgery, so we won't be here. And Loretta's going to teach a lesson, and they're going to cover that night. But she's going to fall right into the same series, and we're just going to carry on with wintertime blues. I don't know. What do you want to talk it? However you want to. The dark night of winter. I don't know what you want to call it. So here's New Year's resolutions. I'm going to read what I put in the workbook, which will be, is it starting? It's not tomorrow night. It's the week after. Yeah, at Greenwood, winter's dark night. They're going to have a small group that meets there. No, meet at Greenwood, or is it here? Oh, it's going to meet here. Okay, where? Don't know yet for sure. Okay, at least start in the atrium. 6:30 on Monday, 6 Monday nights. Okay, boy, I know a lot here, don't I? Like I said, I'm a little bit scattered. So not tomorrow night, but the next Monday night, they start this series on Winter's Dark Night. It's a four-part series. You get a notebook, you do lessons, you talk and share. So this is the first lesson right here. You get a jump start on it. New Year's resolutions. I'm going to just read what's in the lesson, then we're going to talk about it. What time is it? We got plenty of time. Okay, New Year's resolutions. I want to lose weight. I want to run a mile without stopping. I want to stop worrying. I want to save more money. I want to be nicer. I want to stop eating junk food. I want to be more generous. I want to spend less time on social media. I want to spend more time with my kids. To save time and energy, why not just make copies of this year's resolutions and reread them over and again each new year comes along? What's that we say about insanity? To do the same thing over and over and to expect different results, and yet here we are. That's insanity, but we do it every year. Think about it. A resolution is basically, here's what we want to talk about tonight. Think about it. A resolution is basically a combination of what I want and my supposed power. If this approach brings about long-term change for you, you are the exception. Most of us try and fail miserably at this time after time. For a few weeks each winter, we modify our behavior, yet ignore our underlying outlook and attitude. So year after year, we absorb the pain of Christmas, then compound our emotional trauma with New Year's resolutions that inevitably fall apart mid-January, and we wonder why the darkness of winter pushes us deeper into the pit. This is where we start this set of four sessions. What do you want out of life? What do you think it owes you? What would it look like for the planets to align for you? What would it take to attain for you the correct mood? You know, the perfect state of mind. What has to change to make your life perfect? Whether we know it or not, our expectations or our resolutions almost always set us up for disappointment. And predictably, the holidays followed by winter's darkness exaggerate all of this. So that's what's written in the notebook. So we want to talk about, there's 3 points. Exceptions, we're all wired differently. Number two, expectations. I'm not scattered at all. Expectations, we're all wired differently. Two, expectations, we all have different drivers below the surface. And number three, so where's God in all this? So this is just kind of what we're going to talk about for a few minutes. Resolutions, just follow me. Resolutions literally are my personal expectations of what I expect for the next year, accompanied by my assumed or presumed power to be able to carry that out. Isn't that what a resolution is? I know what I want, and I've got the wherewithal to do it. And Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? It just doesn't work. I've tried it over and over again. It doesn't work. So let's just kind of break down expectations. Let's just talk about them for a minute. First of all, here's the first point. Expectation, reasonable or what I would call practical expectations. We're able to kind of look at the future, maybe 3 or 4 weeks or months into the future, and we're able to say it would be reasonable to expect this out of myself or this out of life or this out of my budget or this out of my job situation or whatever. We actually have the ability to make reasonable expectations. They're not crazy. They're not wild. They're not, you know. But is that even really expectations? That's just living life, if you stop and think about it. That's just living life. Yeah, for the next month, I will get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I will go to work, blah, and I'll do this, blah, and this will happen, blah. And so that's reasonable. You know, it's really not expectations, it's just living life. But some of us are satisfied to live that way, and we feel good about that. But then there are others of us who are, I'm going to shoot the moon. You know, I'm a dreamer. I'm going for all the gusto. I don't want to lose 5 pounds. I want to lose 50 pounds. So we're shooting for the moon. We're all in. The higher you dream, the harder you seem to fall. The dreamers, some of us are really, this is where I used to be. Some of us are really demanding when it comes to expectations. I demand this. I'm determined. I'm bold. You know, I'll take this by the horns and I will make it happen. We're out of juice. We're out of energy. We're out of the determiners. Some of us very demanding or assertive or aggressive, however you want to say it. Some of us are just hopeless. We just expect the worst to happen. Life's just always going to fall apart. Any bad luck is going to come my way. It's just what's going to happen. Just the phone rings, it's bad news. Somebody pulls them up the driveway, it's not going to be good. You know, you go to open the mail, I know it's going to be terrible. Just everything is just, and so our expectations of the future just, I don't know, it's kind of like a victim mentality. It's kind of like this fatalistic, well, whatever's going to be is going to be. It's just, there's nothing I can do about it. So we're all wired differently. And when I started thinking about expectations, I thought, well, I know what mine are like. That doesn't mean everybody else is like that. Everybody's different when it comes to expectations. And I don't even know if you can, does everybody know what the word continuum means? You know, I don't even know if you can put it on a continuum and say, you're either this high-stakes dreamer or you're this hopeless, depressed victim, and everything else falls in between there. I don't even think you can do it, describe it that way. It's not that neat and clean. It's messy. But we're all wired differently when it comes to what do you expect, what do you want out of the future, what do you think the future owes you, how do you feel about the future? I'm looking ahead to the year. What do I expect? We're all wired differently there. And I think it brings us to point number two, and that's all because we have different below-the-surface drivers. You know, a computer has drivers in it. We have things that motivate the way we're wired. They're pushers, below-the-surface motivators. And I don't know if this will get everybody in the room. I don't know. But some of us are just desperate for safety. I want a safe life. And to me, that means I want guaranteed outcomes. I want to know what's going to happen. I don't want any surprises. My first wife was diagnosed with cancer. There were a lot of things that hurt me about that, a lot of things that bothered me about that. But the one thing that tore me up worse than anything else was I did not know what the future held. It just killed me, not knowing how long she had, not knowing whether she was going to be healed or not, going to die or not. I mean, the unknown was what killed me. And I remember thinking, God, if you would just give me one thing, good or bad, I don't care, either way, if you would just tell me what's going to happen. Just tell me. If she's going to die, tell me. If she's going to live, tell me. But not knowing is killing me. I want guaranteed outcomes. Why? Because a guaranteed outcome, I can do something with. You know what? I can form a plan. I can make myself feel safe and make myself feel secure. I can circle the wagons. You know, if she's going to die, I'll circle the wagons. I'll make plans to preserve myself. And I had a little two-year-old girl at that time. You know, I can do that. If I know she's going to live, then I'll start making plans for the future. She had to have a radical mastectomy. We'll start saving money for, to rebuild and redo and everything will go back to normal, you know. God never sent me that memo months before she died. And then finally I realized, oh, okay. I finally had a doctor tell me, no, she's not going to make it. But what bothered me, I'm just being honest, okay? I was only 30. I didn't know what I was doing. I'll be honest. My biggest problem was not the loss of my wife. The biggest problem was I wanted to know what the outcome was going to be. I think is that we, that's, I'm just being honest. Well, another driver, I think, is that we are comfort junkies. We're absolutely addicts to comfort. Any kind of pain is seen as evil. Any kind of discomfort. Most everybody who is here tonight, I think, has grown to be okay with pain. If you haven't, you're probably not here. Most of us here are saying, no, I've kind of learned to live with pain. Emotional, physical, spiritual, whatever. I've kind of learned to live with pain. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. But some of us are driven by this addiction to comfort. Any kind of discomfort is bad. Any kind of discomfort, mental, emotional, relational, it's terrible. It's to be avoided at all costs. Don't ever press into it. Don't ever explore it. Don't ever embrace it. When I first got into recovery, I had somebody, and I've told you this before, I had somebody get into my face and just yell. I mean, high decibel yell at me. Wendell, you've got to stop running from the pain. You have to explore your pain. You have to push into it. You have to understand it. You have to, dig into your pain. Stop numbing it and stop running away from it. So some of us have this underlying driver of pain avoidance. We have this deep desire for comfort on every level. Here's the third one. Some of us have this drive for justice. For years, Loretta and I ran youth camps out on Eagle Ridge, out on Barren River Road. I don't know if y'all know where that is. It's a camp out there. But we ran, I don't know how many years. It was a long time. Yeah, she lived there for a long time. So we ran camps. I was like the camp pastor. And the recurring theme from junior hires and high schoolers year after year after year after year is life is not fair. And we would tell them, who told you life was supposed to be fair? Who fed you that line? Who gave you that? You know, they'd come from all different directions. My life is just so hard. It's not fair. And we'd be like, well, we'd love to help you, but before we can do anything to help you, we've got to establish one thing. Life is not fair. Period. God initially programmed justice into the universe. We kind of blew that one. You know, that's not the way the universe runs. The universe is unfair at this point. At this point, it won't always be, but it is at this point. So if we expect life to be just and fair, it ain't going to happen. But some of us face, you know, a new year, and the driver underneath this is we're going to rectify all wrongs. We're going to fix broken things. We're going to correct people who are going the wrong direction. We're going to set people who are mean and deceptive, we're going to set them right. We're going to make everything fair. Life is not fair. And to be driven by that will drive you insane. I have a friend who is literally driven by this underlying, overdeveloped sense of justice. There is no peace in this person's life. Anything wrong, I've got to make that right. And they get no rest. There is no peace in them. And really, on this point too, about the drivers underneath these expectations, all of this is, in one form or another, it's all about having control. I want to control this. I want to control my safety. I want to control my comfort. I want to control the people in my life and make sure everything is fair and just for everybody, including myself. I want to control all this. And again, our buddy Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? We're not qualified to do this. We don't have the wherewithal to ensure our safety or to avoid all pain or to fix all unjust situations. We don't have that in us to do it. We're not smart enough. We're not strong enough. It's just not in us to do this. And really, if we're motivated by that, past a certain place, it really does become about us. It ceases to become about the other people. And it all becomes about me and my personal agenda, what I've got to do. I care about you, but I really want to reach my goals, which is to be comfortable, safe, and to fix all wrong. I want to be the savior of the world. So one is that we're all wired differently when it comes to expectations. The second one is that there are different drivers for these expectations. And the third one is just this question. So where's God in all this? Here we stand at the end of 2:18 and we're facing 2:19. Just really what Matt said is so profound. So what? So what? Really? But yet, in our culture, we make a big deal out of this transition, this yearly transition. It's just another day, you know? When you think about it, Tuesday is just going to be Tuesday. It's just Tuesday. That's all it's going to be, but yet we treat it this other way. And since we do collectively, and maybe it's healthy, maybe it's not, but since we do collectively, where is God in all this? What does God care about our lives? What does God care? Where is he in all this mix? And so I'm going to put out some possibilities, and then I'm going to put out what I am trying to learn. Some say that God is using life to test us. I never got that one. I never understood. Have you heard that? Well, God is just testing you. For what? What? To see if I pass to the next grade? To see whether I get to go to heaven or not? I mean, what is this test thing about? To see how much you love me. Dr. Phil says, how's that one working? You know, is that how we do relationships? We test people. When I was going through the worst thing with Carol, it took over 2 years to pass from the cancer, and some of the days were okay, but most in a laboratory, and God was some kind of mad scientist who was experimenting with me, seeing how much can he take before he cracks. I don't know where I got that picture, but it was in my mind, you know, that God was testing me. But that's what some people think, that life is a test. You have to pass or fail or get a grade or whatever. I don't know. Some say that God wants to control us, that God is out almost like a puppeteer that says, oh, no, you can't go that way. You got to go this way. And he micromanages every little part of our lives. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't be thinking that thought. Oh, no, don't talk to that person. Talk to this person. So God is micromanaging every part of our life. That he's involved not in an intimate, loving way, but an intimate, controlling way. Where he's just, you know, and I don't know if he does it in a frantic way or if he does it in a dictatorial way. You know what I'm saying? You can see the frantic way, he's panicked over us. Or you can see the dictatorial way of like, no, you know, this real stern thing. But either way, it makes God pretty small. Really? God gets to control every aspect of our life, either in a frantic or a dictatorial way. That God gets smaller and smaller. In my mind, he does. Maybe I'm wrong. Some say that God is just, you know, our sugar daddy. He's just out to give us anything we want. You know, and some people just said, anything you ask in my name, you get it. Boy, people take that to market. You know, oh, I got a blank check from God. You know, I mean, there are literally religious leaders today who claim they have Lear jets and Maseratis because they claim them in Jesus' name. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, seriously, God just gives us whatever we want. You ask it and God just gives it and he just doles it out, you know, whatever. That one hadn't worked for me. I hadn't even tried it. I thought it was a little too ludicrous to try. Some people say, and this is a common notion today, that God kind of said, okay, so if we're gonna believe that God created us, which some people today are like, nah, I can't believe that, but if I'm going to believe that God created us, I'm going to say, okay, he created us, he kind of set things in motion, and he gave us this manual to go by, and then he just left. He just drove off. It's like, y'all do the best you can. I set everything in motion. I gave you a book to tell you how to do it. You're on your own. See if you can understand the book and get it right. And Jacob, my son, he said something one time that just floored me. He said, so we've got 70 or 80 years to get this right. You know, literally, God puts us here. He gives us this instruction manual, and he says, you got 70 or 80 years to get it right. And if you don't get it right, you're toast for eternity. You're toast. I'm thinking, whoa, what kind of God is that? You know, literally. And suppose you don't get a copy of the manual. You live on the other side of the planet. You don't get a copy of the manual. God says, well, you're double toast. You know, you're fried on both sides. So these are some of the things that I've heard and some of the things that I've felt and toyed with. So I'm facing the future. I'm facing life. I have certain expectations. They may be driven reasonably or they may be unreasonably. You see, it's all mixed up. It's all crazy. There's just so many ways you can come at this. So I'm facing life and I look at my God and I say, difference to you whatsoever. Because, I mean, life is good, but life can be very, very hard. And life sometimes makes sense, but life most often is very confusing. Relationships and feelings and, you know, it gets very confusing. So where is God in all this? Is this a test? Is he out to control us? Is he out to, you know, where is he? This is where I've come out. This is where I stand. I'm not saying this is where you're supposed to be. I'm just saying this is where I've come out on this. I think life is a journey. I love the name of what we do, pathway. We're on a pathway, which means we're moving. We're on a journey. It's not it's not a march. It's not a military march. It's more like an adventure, an exploration. And it takes us through some of the darkest, cloudiest valleys, and it takes us to some of the highest, most scenic peaks. But it's this journey that we're on. And I think where God is in all this is he just simply says, can I go with you? Can I go with you? Stop and think about that. The God of the universe says, can I go with you on this journey called life? Can I walk into the future with you? Can I explore, for what the calendar says, can I explore 2019 with you, with us? Let's just see. Let's just see what it might look like with us walking together. I don't want to control you. I don't want to demand anything. This is not a test. That's the way the story started, y'all. That's the way the story started. What is the first thing we see with God and humans? It's the very first thing we see is him walking in a garden. I look at that picture. Do y'all know where that picture came from? That's right behind Loretta's house, out in the country on Iron Bridge Road. But there's a path there. And I can, you know, that's like through the garden. That's God in. So really, I would almost ask the question tonight, which I think is safe to ask here. What does 2019 look like to you? I think it's one of two things. If God just simply wants to walk with us on this adventure, on this journey, whatever you want to call it, you either look at it one of two ways. You look at 2019 and you say, what do I want to be in the upcoming year? What do I want to be? Two key words, want and be. What do I want to be in this upcoming year? Or you face it the way I always used to face it and a lot of us used to face it. What do I think I ought to do this year? There's a difference. There's a huge difference. What do I think I ought to do? What am I supposed to do this year? What is my task? What is my job that I have to do this next year? There's miles difference between what do I want to be and what should I do. There's a difference there. And when you explore, you will wind up doing, and God is with you, you'll do lots of stuff. You will wind up doing a truckload of stuff, probably more than if you'd set out to do something. You'll wind up doing all kinds of stuff. But it won't be a test, and it won't be a drudgery, and it won't be an ought to. It will be an adventure. And it'll be an adventure like we've never had before. So when I look ahead, right now, the way I am, I'm confused. I'm kind of fractured inside. I'm this morning in the service. I know I have my God with me. I know I have my brothers and sisters with me. And so let's get going. Let's explore. I'm thinking about myself. What can I be this year? What can I learn to be? One of the things, I'm going to tell you what, one of the things I want to become this year, I want to become a receiver of grace. I know how to give it, but I don't know how to receive it. I want to let you all love on me. I'm not good at it. I suck at that. And I want, right, shaking her head. Yeah. You're not so good at it either, girl. I want to learn to be good with letting people love me and letting God love me, and because I'm not good at that. So that's not something I want to do so much as just I want to become this person who receives grace, learns to be loved. What do you want to be? You know, what do you want to be? You might want to talk about it in a few minutes when Matt comes up for open chair time. So we got one more song. Come to Jesus, right?